The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo, Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection, Chapter 14, The Power of the Instruments, page 729. The second member of the Yoga of Self-Perfection is the heightened, enlarged, and rectified power of the instruments of our normal nature. The cultivation of this second perfection need not wait for the security of the equal mind and spirit, but it is only in that security that it can become complete and act in the safety of the divine leading. The object of this cultivation is to make the nature a fit instrument for divine works. All work is done by power, by Shakti. And since the integral yoga does not contemplate abandonment of works, but rather a doing of all works from the divine consciousness and with the supreme guidance, the characteristic powers of the instruments, mind, life, and body, must not only be purified of defects, but raised to a capacity for this greater action. In the end, they must undergo a spiritual and supramental transfiguration. There are four members of this second part of the sadhana, or discipline of self-perfection, and the first of them is right Shakti, the right condition of the powers of the intelligence, heart, vital, mind, and body. It will only be possible at present to suggest a preliminary perfection of the last of these four, for the full siddhi will have to be dealt with after I have spoken of the supermind and its influence on the rest of the being. The body is not only the necessary outer instrument of the physical part of action, but for the purposes of this life, a base or pedestal also for all inner action. All working of mind or spirit has its vibration in the physical consciousness, records itself there in a kind of subordinate corporeal notation, and communicates itself to the material world, partly at least, through the physical machine. But the body of man has natural limitations in this capacity, which it imposes on the play of the higher parts of his being. And, secondly, it has a subconscient consciousness of its own, in which it keeps with an obstinate fidelity the past habits and past nature of the mental and vital being, which automatically opposes and obstructs any very great upward change, or at least prevents it from becoming a radical transformation of the whole nature. It is evident that if we are to have a free divine or spiritual and supramental action conducted by the force and fulfilling the character of a diviner energy, some fairly complete transformation must be effected in this outward character of the bodily nature. The physical being of man has always been felt by the seekers of perfection to be a great impediment, and it has been the habit to turn from it with contempt, denial, or aversion, and a desire to suppress altogether, or as far as may be, the body and the physical life. But this cannot be the right method for the integral yoga. The body is given us as one instrument necessary to the totality of our works, and it is to be used, not neglected, hurt, suppressed, or abolished. It is imperfect, recalcitrant, obstinate. So are also the other members, the vital being, heart and mind and reason. It has, like them, to be changed and perfected, and to undergo a transformation. As we must get ourselves a new life, new heart, new mind, so we have in a certain sense to build for ourselves a new body. The first thing the will has to do with the body is to impose on it, progressively, a new habit of all its being, consciousness, force, and outward and inward action. It must be taught an entire passivity in the hands first of the higher instruments, but eventually in the hands of the spirit and its controlling and informing Shakti. It must be accustomed not to impose its own limits on the nobler members, but to shape its action and its response to their demands, to develop, one might say, a higher notation, a higher scale of responses. At present, the notation of the body and the physical consciousness has a very large determining power on the music made by this human harp of God. The notes we get from the spirit, from the psychic soul, from the greater life behind our physical life cannot come in freely, cannot develop their high, powerful, and proper strain. This condition must be reversed. The body and the physical consciousness must develop the habit of admitting and shaping themselves to these higher strains, and not they, but the nobler parts of the nature, must determine the music of our life and being. The control of the body and life by the mind and its thought and will is the first step towards this change. All yoga implies the carrying of that control to a very high pitch. But afterwards, the mind must itself give place to the spirit, to the spiritual force, the supermind, and the supermental force. And finally, the body must develop a perfect power to hold whatever force is brought into it by the spirit, and to contain its action without spilling and wasting it, or itself getting cracked. It must be capable of being filled and powerfully used by whatever intensity of spiritual or higher mind or life force, without any part of the mechanical instrument being agitated, upset, broken, or damaged by the inrush or pressure, as the brain, vital health, or moral nature are often injured in those who unwisely attempt yogic practice without preparation, or by undue means, or rashly invite a power they are intellectually, vitally, morally unfit to bear. And, thus filled, it must have the capacity to work normally, automatically, rightly, according to the will of that spiritual or other now unusual agent, without distorting, diminishing, or mistranslating its intention and stress. This faculty of holding, dharana shakti, in the physical consciousness, energy, and machinery, is the most important siddhi, or perfection, of the body. The result of these changes will be to make the body a perfect instrument of the spirit. The spiritual force will be able to do what it wills, and as it wills in and through the body. It will be able to conduct an unlimited action of the mind, or at a higher stage of the supermind, without the body betraying the action by fatigue, incapacity, inaptitude, or falsification. It will be able, too, to pour a full tide of the life force into the body and conduct a large action and joy of the perfected vital being without that quarrel and disparity which is the relation of the normal life instincts and life impulses to the insufficient physical instrument they are obliged to use. And it will also be able to conduct a full action of the spiritualized psychic being, not falsified, degraded, or in any way marred by the lower instincts of the body, and to use physical action and expression as a free notation of the higher psychical life. And in the body itself, there will be a presence of a greatness of sustaining force, an abounding strength, an energy of puissance, of outgoing and managing force, a lightness, swiftness, and adaptability of the nervous and physical being, a holding and responsive power in the whole physical machine and its driving springs, of which it is now even at its strongest and best incapable. Mahatva, Bala, Lahuta, Dharana, Samarthya. This energy will not be in its essence and outward, physical or muscular strength, but will be of the nature, first, of an unbounded life power, or pranic force. Secondly, sustaining and using this pranic energy, a superior or supreme willpower acting in the body. The play of the pranic shakti in the body, or form, is the condition of all action, even of the most apparently inanimate physical action. It is the universal prana, as the ancients knew, which in various forms sustains or drives material energy in all physical things, from the electron and atom and gas up through the metal, plant, animal, physical man. To get this pranic shakti to act more freely and forcibly in the body is knowingly or unknowingly the attempt of all who strive for a greater perfection of or in the body. The ordinary man tries to command it mechanically by physical exercises and other corporeal means. The Hatha yogin, more greatly and flexibly, but still mechanically by asana and pranayama. But for our purpose, it can be commanded by more subtle, essential, and pliable means. First, by a will in the mind widely opening itself to and potently calling in the universal pranic shakti, on which we draw and fixing its stronger presence and more powerful working in the body. Secondly, by the will in the mind, opening itself rather to the spirit and its power and calling in a higher pranic energy from above, a supramental pranic force. Thirdly, the last step, by the highest supramental will of the spirit entering and taking up directly the task of the perfection of the body. In fact, it is always really a will within which drives and makes effective the pranic instrument, even when it uses what seem to be purely physical means. But at first it is dependent on the inferior action. When we go higher, the relation is gradually reversed. It is then able to act in its own power, or handle the rest only as a subordinate instrumentation. Most men are not conscious of this pranic force in the body, or cannot distinguish it from the more physical form of energy which it informs and uses for its vehicle. But as the consciousness becomes more subtle by practice of yoga, we can come to be aware of the sea of pranic shakti around us, feel it with the mental consciousness, concretely with the mental sense, see its courses and movements, and direct and act upon it immediately by the will. But until we thus become aware of it, we have to possess a working or at least an experimental faith in its presence and in the power of the will to develop a greater command and use of this prana force. There is necessary a faith, shraddha, in the power of the mind to lay its will on the state and action of the body, such as those have who heal disease by faith, will, or mental action. But we must seek this control not only for this or any other limited use, but generally as a legitimate power of the inner and greater over the outer and lesser instrument. This faith is combated by our past habits of mind, by our actual normal experience of its comparative helplessness in our present imperfect system, and by an opposing belief in the body and physical consciousness. For they too have a limiting shraddha of their own, which opposes the idea in the mind when it seeks to impose on the system the law of a higher yet unattained perfection. But as we persist and find this power giving evidence of itself to our experience, the faith in the mind will be able to found itself more firmly and grow in vigor, and the opposing faith in the body will change, admit what it first denied, and not only accept in its habits the new yoke, but itself call for this higher action. Finally, we shall realize the truth that this being we are, is or can become whatever it has the faith and will to be. For faith is only a will aiming at greater truth, and cease to set limits to our possibility or deny the potential omnipotence of the self in us, the divine power working through the human instrument. That, however, at least as a practical force, comes in at a later stage of high perfection. To be continued in the next reading.